You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hello and welcome to The Rest is Football with me, Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer and Micah Richards. There's been another hugely significant weekend of football for us all to reflect on. There were more twists in the Premier League title race, relegation confirmed for Sheffield United and survival secured for some. And of course, the most significant news of all, Leicester City back in the top flight. Yes, I'll be making sure we talk about that in more detail later on. But we're going to start today with the exciting North London derby that saw Arsenal just about keep on track at the top of the league. Where were you watching that one, chaps?
Just as normally, in the house. What a game, wasn't it? It was just like, I thought, oh goodness me, this is it. Well, it was embarrassing at times, wasn't it? For Tottenham, I mean, we know Arsenal brilliant at set pieces. We know Tottenham really poor at set pieces. But to be fair to Tottenham, they came back, didn't they? Albeit gifted by a mistake from the goalkeeper. But it was a fantastic game, wasn't it?
Great stuff, Micah.
Yeah, I was there. I was at this stadium. Wonderful stadium, I have to say. Atmosphere was brilliant. This was a game I didn't really know what the outcome was going to be. I didn't know if the emotion of the game and Arsenal, you know, the importance of probably both sides as well. Spurs sort of slipped up in recent weeks going for the Champions League, Villa being in great form, and then obviously Arsenal keeping the pace alive for the title. So I just thought it was a really entertaining game from start to finish. Obviously, Arsenal was great in that first half, and then Spurs come back in that second half. Really entertaining.
I was distinctly worried at half time it could get a bit embarrassing. But they showed a bit of character and came back and a bit of resilience. I know, as you said, the keeper was massively mistaken for the first goal that they scored. But overall, they showed a bit of pluck, but not that was satisfying.
You can imagine Arteta at half-time, can't you, Gaz? Saying, right, lads, nothing stupid. This game is won. Nothing stupid at all. And we come out here with 3 points. And then the keeper's thinking, oh, my God, what are you doing? I mean, the stress he caused to the Arsenal fans and to the Arsenal manager, but they got through in the end.
We need to talk about Spurs, though, and their set pieces.
Oh, my God, how embarrassing is it?
We've basically bigged up Spurs for how they approach games, really well-drilled. I thought the manager has done a fantastic job in changing the way they approach games, front foot, really explosive, the way they want to play, aggressive in how they press. But set pieces, I think it's a massive part of the game and always will be been. And okay, some teams are better than others, but I just think if you want to bring in these set piece coaches and they do a brilliant job, but you know Arsenal are so good on set pieces, And you could see exactly what Arsenal were trying to do on all the corners. We're talking about corners in, you know, specifically. And me as a defender, I'm cringing at what I'm seeing with the Spurs. And not just the defenders, the whole team. So for those who didn't maybe see the game, on set pieces, you have sometimes zonal, you sometimes have, you know, man marking. But what Arsenal did, they put all their players behind Spurs' players. So they sort of tricked them like they potentially would go to the back. So Spurs are playing zonal. And as the ball's coming into the box, the Spurs players are not even looking to where the Arsenal players are going. It's almost like no one's scoring in my area and they're running across the players. No one's trying to get in the way or block. They're just worried about their zone. And when the ball's coming in, they've not even checked the shoulders. And then, you know, Paul Højbjerg, he's trying to do two jobs. He's on the half turn. And then by the time the ball comes in for the own goal, he's facing towards the ball, doesn't know what's behind him, and scores an own goal. And I just think, surely, with how good Arsenal are at set pieces, that's one thing you would spend a little bit more time, especially when it's happened once in a game. It happens once, okay, but not twice in the game.
What do you think of the whole, as a defender, Mike, is the whole thing about the difference between zonal marking at corners and, say, taking man for man?
I actually quite like the zonal, but I actually like a bit of both. So me as a defender, I found it very hard to keep my eye on the ball and on my man and basically get the leap that I needed. So what we would do, we'd have some players who would try block and man mark, but leave me the space in the middle of the box for me to go and be aggressive. So it works for some teams going zonal and not for others. But when you're not aggressive, when you don't have the awareness around you of where to go and tap them areas, it's not, when he's zonal, you don't just stand in that position. You're on the half turn, waiting, anticipating where the ball could potentially go and then clear it. So I understand why teams do it, because I think you're just concentrating on one thing, and that is the ball at times. But I just think that they got it wrong the other day against Arsenal.
There's pros and cons for man marking and for zonal marking. But what it boils down to character, determination, concentration, all of those things. Set pieces are a massive part of the game. Arsenal would not be where they are this season without the success that set pieces. So it's a huge part of the game. If you're no good at them, if you haven't got people who want to attack the ball, who can concentrate, who can stay with their man, and all of those things that are involved in it, then you're going to get punished. They always have been. Yes, people have got set piece coaches now and what have you, which is fine and which is really good, but they've always been a huge part of the game. And if you're good at them, both for and against, then that is a huge bonus for you.
Is it difficult, Micah, defending corners as a defender when you can't see?
Well, it's ridiculous. And it's not, it doesn't help as well with the situation. And we've done it on Match of the Day plenty of times with the goalkeeper. So Vicario, who's been outstanding, we've given his plaudits this season. But he needs to be aggressive. If someone's standing in front of you, push him out of the way. I don't understand why he's so nice. Like the old school goalkeepers back in the day, Peter Schmeichel comes to mind. Even David James with his frame and his size. If someone's in your space, move them out the way. If you can't see the ball,
Micah,
you can't get a head on it. It's ridiculous.
I was referring to your eyesight.
He means because you're fucking blind.
Well, hold on. I've got my glasses on today.
But not from corners, you wouldn't have had them on, would you?
Yeah, I, to be honest, I couldn't see the ball until it was 5 feet in front of me, but I still got the ball away. My word.
I know. It's not just defenders, though, is it? You've got your forwards have to come back and have to do a job. I hated coming back for set pieces. You got to run all the way back, and it's like, oh, but when you're there, you've got to do your job as well. It's not only the defenders. If it's just defenders, you'll get punished time and time again. It's really annoying at times because it's all of those aggression, concentration, all of those things. If you're no good at it, you're going to get done, and Tottenham are hopeless at set pieces.
That's something they should be able to resolve, though, isn't it?
Well,
yes, they will do. They will resolve that. I think it just comes with the practice, doesn't it? I mean, like, if you look at the chink in their armour, you're thinking, how can we get better next season? And set pieces is massive. And it's, like you said, it's just muscle memory, isn't it? The more you do, the more you get better at them. So I don't think it'll be a huge problem going forward. I just think this season, it's not been good enough.
Yeah, I think Kai Havertz probably worth a mention. Yeah. He was there. A lot of people questioned the buy when he first went, didn't they? A lot of people thought, and I'm including probably most of us three, what is his position? But he's found his way this season. He's become a very important part of the Arsenal team, particularly in the second half of the season.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. I think he's certainly got better the season's gone on. I think the questions were legitimate and understanding, but to his credit, he showed great character. And yeah, he's one of the ones that has stood up, and he's one of the go-to players, isn't he? He's one of the guarantees in the Arsenal team now.
I think he was always a really clever player, wasn't he? Really, really skillful, great touch. But I think us pundits, the media was talking about maybe some of the chances as well that he used to miss. But now he seems to be taking them chances a lot more. He's always been a good player. If you actually watch him, it's just this system. And that's why you've got to give Arteta credit. I prefer him a little bit further forward. When he plays a little bit deeper, I feel like I prefer a Partey or Jorginho in there and him having the freedom to do what he needs to do. But we have to give Arteta credit, you know, not just because they're winning games and playing well. It's the fact of, you think North London Derby, who's a better team? You'd probably say Arsenal, but it's a tough, you know, place to go. But I think Spurs have something like 66% possession. He basically said, okay, you'll have the ball and we'll hit you on the counter-attack. Did exactly that at Man City when they got the draw. Let's do that. And we always thought Arsenal of being sort of expansive and aggressive, but they found a different way of winning football matches. And I think that's the biggest asset I think Arteta has brought to this team this season.
That's probably, well, they've got Manchester United away as well, Arsenal in the running. But that would have been the one that they knew would have probably be the most difficult, given how Manchester United have performed this season.
That was a massive result for them.
It was. Having said that, Manchester City did what Manchester City do. They went to Forest and, you know, kind of fairly comfortable in the end, I suppose.
A couple of big chances Forest had, though, didn't they?
They did. I mean, yeah, they did.
Missed Chris Wood. Missed a couple of big chances, but yeah, they did what they had to. It wasn't a sparkling performance from City, but how many times have we said it doesn't have to be? You've just got to go and get the points, and they did that. And I mean, do you think Arsenal will go unbeaten and win every game now, Micah, or what?
There's always two games I was looking at the running for both sides. I was thinking Man City, Spurs away.
Yeah,
always a tough game. They do well against Man City, and I'm thinking Arsenal, Man United away. It just and people can talk about Man United, you know, they're up and down. We know that. But they've had some decent results against Liverpool this season. I just think that's a game that they're all looking for because Man United can turn it up and at any time. If there's points dropped, I think it's going to be them games from both teams. We might see another little twist, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a distinct possibility of that. I think it should go to the last day of the season, at least, I think, even though Liverpool might not be involved in that now, having stuttered in the last couple of weeks or so. A good goal for, and an important goal too, I think, for Erling Haaland. Probably, you know, needed that. We know what it's like, Alan, don't you, when you've gone a little bit of a spell, not that his spells are particularly long, but when you go a bit of a spell without a goal, the world seems to return to normal once you've scored, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't care who or what you are. If you haven't scored for a while, then it definitely plays on your mind. It doesn't matter how mentally strong you are, it has to, and it would have with him. So, I mean, I don't think any of us doubted him, did we? It was just a matter of time before he got back on track and back to normality, and it was a really good finish the way he pushed it onto his right foot and then finished it off. So yeah, for him, confidence wise, do the world a good for him.
Just coming into that last stage of the season as well, there is a distinct possibility that both sides could win all their games left, and they obviously, you know, It comes back to that point. Would you sooner have the points that Arsenal have got, or would you sooner have the games in hand that, that City have got? I think under normal circumstances, you'd probably take Arsenal's position. But if you are Manchester City, you'd probably take Manchester City's position.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think you'd take you'd take the game in hand, wouldn't you? Definitely. But yeah, it's tight either or. Both, again, Man City probably dropped off their standards, but Arsenal have kept going. That's a great thing to see all the way to the end.
Manchester City's fixtures: Wolves at home, Fulham away, Tottenham away, West Ham at home. Tottenham away is the obvious one there. But Fulham have pulled out a few performances this season at home, haven't they? But I suppose really that the opposition in there, not much to play for either. I mean, I know that, you know, teams are professional, they bash on nowadays, and but once you know you're in that mid-table kind of zone, it's not quite, even it's just a subconscious thing, isn't it, that you see what you see. Get your deck chair out on the beach and all that.
Yeah, you know how it is. If you're a tiny, tiny bit off it, which I know you're absolutely right. You've got to try and be professional. But when, I know it's, your job isn't done, but when there's not a lot there to go for, and people will say, well, hang on a minute, if you finish two places higher, then the club get another so-and-so. But players don't really look at it that way, do they? And if you're a tiny bit off it, then that makes the difference. But I would expect City to win there.
Arsenal, Bournemouth at home, Man U away, as we've said, and then finishing with Everton at home. Everton now safe, of course, after Saturday. So I think it's going to be... I wouldn't be surprised if both teams won all games.
Yeah, probably.
But then on the last day, if it's like that on the last day, and City have to win, you know, it takes us back to Aguero country, doesn't it? Aguero!
It does. What about Gundogan as well? Do you remember Gundogan? Villa.
Of course. Yeah, two down.
But yes. Got a couple of goals, didn't they? I mean, yeah. It'd be exciting for everyone.
Not for the players, maybe not. I've been there. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Absolutely is. Liverpool, you know, they've kind of slipped away, haven't they, in the title race down the home stretch. Did that surprise you?
It has me, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different things you can look at. I think with the Klopp announcement, since winning the Carabao Cup, it's sort of all gone downhill for them after that, hasn't it? Yeah, it has surprised me because I thought they were there. I thought they were ready with the players that they've got. Yeah, it has. Even at the weekend, after what happened at Everton against your biggest rivals, that you got battered and you got outfought, and all the accusations are chucked at you, I thought they would have come out like all guns blazing at the weekend against West Ham. But the first half, Liverpool were rotten again, weren't they?
They've kind of lost their form just at the wrong time, haven't they? That's one win, two draws, two losses in the last five games. It's looking very much like third place for them. What do you think's been missing? Do you think, I think we've pointed out lots of chances, haven't we, in these previous games, but do you think the Klopp resignation has anything to do with that? I know it's impossible to ultimately know because we've got nothing to compare it against if he had have stayed. But do you think that affects players in some way, even if they, because he's not there next season, or do you just think it's one of those things?
Yeah, I think it maybe does affect, yeah, because, I mean, he's got a lot of close relationships with the players there. He's built up a great bond. And we've just said it before, even if it's a tiny bit, if you're not at it, then you do get punished. So I think mentally for the players, it perhaps has affected them, yeah. I mean, and you say that the loss of form from a few players and the injuries. I mean, everyone's had injuries, haven't they? So can't really complain about that. Salah hasn't been anywhere near what he has been in the past, and it's been certainly a quiet period from him ever since he come back from the African Cup of Nations. He hasn't been anywhere near as good as he can be, has he?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think as well. I think Trent, you know, the injury to Trent, he's been out, and the way Liverpool have played over the last couple of seasons, he's been, you know, one of the key driving forces behind their success. I think Robertson as well. I think with Liverpool, a lot of people are talking about that. You know, they're strikers on the front line. They've got the best probably in Europe, but in other key positions, Conor Bradley has done excellent when he's coming into the team. I think when Robertson has not been playing, I think Tsimikas has not been at the level required. Maybe in past seasons he has. He sort of filled in when need be. I think Van Dijk has been outstanding this season, but he's constantly had to chop and change centre-half partners, whether that's Konate or Kwanzaa. You know, it's been difficult. He's had to do pretty much, he's had to be flawless for big parts of the season.
And the keeper missing.
The keeper missing, even though Kelleher did well when he come in. But it's just like, if Van Dijk's not flawless in a game, it hurts him so, so much. And then, like Alan said, when Salah drops off it, normally Salah, even when he's not playing well, he just scores and he sort of forget about it. But some of these performances of recent weeks, because he's not been playing well and not been scoring, you see the effect. Losing Jota as well. How many important goals has he scored for Liverpool over these years as well? I just think in big moments, they've sort of faltered when it really mattered. I think that's been the difference.
What about the thought that Liverpool are ahead of schedule and maybe punched above their weight this season? I'm not sure of that. When you look at the players that, I mean, they've suffered from injuries, but that's what happened to everyone. I mean, when you look at their midfield and Szoboszlai and McAllister, and you've mentioned the front 4-5, Trent, Robertson.
They've done better than I thought. I think that one thing is they've basically got a new midfield this season, didn't you? And prior to the season, I thought it might take a bit of time to bed in. But that hasn't been the problem. So therefore, by the end of the season, they're obviously fully bedded in. I think it's just one of those things. They've just had their little glitch in form at probably the wrong time. I wonder about the managerial announcement when it was. I wonder whether I don't know whether it was all planned to do that announcement at that particular time, or whether the story might have been coming out and they decided to suddenly make an announcement, because clearly the players didn't know at the time. I think initially all the it galvanised everyone to finish the season for Klopp, but then internally, if the manager's going at the end of the season in terms of perhaps negotiating your long-term future, that sort of thing for players, it could conceivably have had some sort of effect. Or they might have just played badly and missed a few chances for a few games, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with that. Although, you know, I suppose it was an example that we've never seen at Liverpool over the years. We've never seen it under the Klopp years. And that's obviously that slight falling out, that little spat on the touchline between his star player Mo Salah and obviously Jurgen Klopp. What did you make of that?
You know, when I first saw it, it was more sadness that come to mind for me. You've got two absolute legends of the game. And obviously, they're going through a difficult patch in the last few games. They give everything for the club. They're used to winning. And it was just a moment which normally happens in the dressing room. So a lot of people over the weekend talking about it's a disgrace and all that. And once you bring something that happens into from the dressing room out, I agree, because you're sort of undermining the manager, and the manager is supposed to be the most important person, especially in front of the media. But it was just, for me, it was just down to frustration, knowing that they were so close to do something magnificent this season, and it's just crumbling before their eyes. Salah is one of the, you know, I've been in a dressing room with him. He is a great person, he's a great pro, and he's a winner. And because of the fact that he's not playing and he wanted more minutes, he reacted in a way which is unacceptable. You know, I don't think his legacy should be tarnished by this one moment. It was just a lack of respect for the manager at the wrong time, I thought.
Also, we don't quite know what was said on that touchline.
Of course.
Because everything, when Salah first came out and he was stood on the side, everything looked fairly calm, didn't it? He was about to bring his substitute on. And then Klopp kind of got a little bit closer to him and said something. And then obviously Salah looked like he bit, and like there was a spat. Now, I don't see it was a disgrace at all between the two of them. I know people are talking like that. These things happen in life. They're human beings. It's not like they went, you know, throwing punches at each other, anything completely mad like that. But there was clearly a little bit of angst there. And I suspect it's because Mo Salah felt possibly disrespected by being left out. I know people might think that, well, why should he think that? He's been there years and years and years. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. His record's unbelievable, particularly in pressure situations and stuff. And he probably couldn't fathom in his head why, you know, the manager had left him out. Now, as Alan said, he's not been quite the same since the African Cup of Nations, but that's difficult because going away, and then he had hamstring injury, and then it reoccurred and stuff like that. So it's taken time. But I know that if similar circumstances, if say, Alan, you've gone three, four games without a goal, which happens to everybody at some point in the season, you would expect your manager as the star man to stick with you at that particular point. And if you'd have been left out, you'd have had the raving hump. You probably wouldn't have shown it publicly like that, but you don't know what was said. What do you think, Alan?
No, I agree, absolutely. I mean, it's happened. It's happened to us when... I mean, there's an argument for both sides, because a lot of fans will say he hasn't been at it and his body language hasn't been great. And if that's the case, then because of who you've got around you, then you can be left out. Fine, I get that. But I also understand exactly what you're saying. When you need a little bit of backing, when you need a little bit of help, when you need a little bit of support, then you're looking to your manager to say, okay, it's not going as well, but stick with me, and we'll get through it because of what he's done for that football club. Yeah, absolutely, I would have the hump for being left out. But then he left out the previous weekend. They got the result. He's left out in the derby, wasn't he? So then was brought back, I should say, for the derby, but didn't perform. So there's an argument for both sides. I think if it had just been left at that, what happened on the touchline, it could have been turned around to say, yeah, he was disappointed. He didn't want to be substitute. That's fine. That's everyone. But Moore poured a bit more fire on it, didn't he? But when he went through the media and said, if I speak now, then that's what he said. He said, then there will be fire. So that added more fuel to it. There's no doubt about it that it got a bigger story, I think, because of what he said there.
Have you two been in that situation before?
Yeah, I've been left out. I've been left out.
Yeah, but when Alan gets left out, the manager loses his job.
Oh, he gets the manager sacked.
I refer to Ruud Gullit.
Oh, God. I remember we were playing, I think it was Aston Villa away, and I was sharing with Steve Harper. And I just had a feeling, you know, Friday night, I had a feeling. I said to Harps, I said, I think the manager's going to leave me out tomorrow. I'm not kidding you. 30 seconds later, there was a knock on the door. And I said, that's it. The knock came along. And I said, go on, you answer it. I'm not answering it. Harps got up, answered the door. There he was. So Bobby stood at the door. Is Alan there? I need to have a word with him. And I fucking knew what was coming. And I was raging. So I got, anyway, he said, and I obviously didn't agree with him. He left me out. We went to Aston Villa. And I think he played Patrick Kluivert instead of me. And it was one of those guys where we went into the game and I think Kluivert scored. And I'm thinking, right, what do I do? Do I sit and clap now? And do I have a big smile on my face? And then there's a part of you, we were getting beaten in the game anyway. And it's like he looks over and he says, go and get warmed up. You're going on. It's if, okay, and you left me out, but you now want me to go and save the game. I get that's human nature, isn't it? You're going to be angry and disappointed. So totally get how Salah would have been feeling.
I presume Ruud Gullit didn't come and knock on your bedroom door
that was
to
the difference.
Tell you were left out.
That was the huge difference. Ruud didn't tell me at all until an hour before the game when we all walked into the dressing room and it was on the sheet in the dressing room and he didn't say a word to me. And that, I think, is wrong.
Well, I had one circumstance. I mean, I know this sounds odd to people, you were left out for the occasional game, but it was different back then. Squads were smaller. You didn't have rotation. You only had like two subs and stuff like that. So I was playing. I've talked before about when Cruyff played me on the wing all season at Barcelona, just I think to try and get make it so that I got the hump and had a strop and like I wanted to leave the club and all that. But I'd kind of played the game all season, right, run up and down the touchline, never scored any goals, but across the ball all the time. Bit dull, but I got on with it, very professional, did the right thing. And then I think it's about, I don't know, 4 or 5 games left of the season and we're playing Real Madrid in the Clásico in the Nou Camp. And I think we're about 3 points behind Real Madrid. We had to win that game to get back in it. I think it was just 2 points for a win back then as well. So we had to win that game to get back in it. And he left me out. And I thought, he'd never left me out before. He'd always played me on the wing. He'd substituted me at halftime, stuff like that before. But then he left me out against Real Madrid. And in the 3 games that we played Real Madrid at the Nou Camp, I'd scored a hat-trick and the winner in the other two. So I was like, oh, fuck, you got to be kidding me. So the game goes on. We've got to win it. And he's put this young guy up front who, frankly, wasn't brilliant. And the game goes on. It's 0-0. It's 0-0. We get about half an hour gone and the whole crowd starts singing. It was like, I got goosebumps. Like, Lineka, Lineka. So I was like, you know, like they do, Messi. And there in Micah, the similarities end between me and Messi. We have the same song. And that is it, aside from that. But anyway, they sing it. So it gets to half time. So I'm thinking, oh, he often makes half-time substitutes, but nah, does he help put me on? So it goes to about 60 minutes and he looks over and I thought, is he looking at, you know, like when you're on the bench, if you are, you're looking at the manager's eye occasionally, like, get me on. And he just looked beyond me and said, yeah, so-and-so, you go and warm up. So, oh, right. So anyway, so he comes on as a substitute and then the crowd start again. It's like, well, here we go. Come on, get me on, man. Get me on. Again, another player warms up. And now there's about 10 minutes to go and it's still 0-0. And I'm thinking, I haven't got a temper, but that's as close as I ever really get. And I'm kind of, I can't believe this. And then he got the guy and he went, right, you're going on, last substitution. And it wasn't me, cool. Right? And I've just gone, oh, you just. And I did snap, not like Mo Salah, but it was on the bench and there were no, you know, in those days there weren't cameras on you all the time. And I just turned across to him and I said it in Spanish and I just went, you have not got the balls to put me on there now. And then he put the other fella on. So, and it finished 0-0 and there were demonstrations in the streets.
Micah. There's the headline. Lineker compares himself to Messi.
In no particular way whatsoever.
Lineker.
Messi. Messi.
Messi. There you go. Two Barcelona legends. And he's both of them. Oh, I need a break to get over that kind of beautiful moment.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
It's done. Goal of the year, part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, win. We're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. and keep your flower beds fresh with a 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear debris with the 40-volt jet fan leaf blower. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome back to The Rest Is Football with Alan Shearer, Micah Richards and me, Gary Lineker. Gents, let's turn our attention to the nervy end of the table, even more nervy end, the bottom. Sheffield United, sadly, have gone. It's always tough for supporters, but and I suppose at this in this season, they didn't really, at any point, have much hope, did they really?
No. No, I mean, defensively, they've been all over the place, haven't they, Sheffield United?
What are you giggling at, Micah?
In a way, Alan was... No.
No,
it was so dismissive, wasn't it? No.
Well, he's got a point. I mean, it's not only they've lost a lot of games.
They got rid of a couple of their best players. They were up against it from the off. They've just been hopeless defensively, haven't they?
97 goals conceded.
Yeah.
That's mad, isn't it? 97 goals.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to break the record. I mean, what was it? I think it was 100, was it, for a 42-game season. So, they just concede for fun. I mean, do you know what it is? At Newcastle at the weekend, they should have been 3-0 up. I know they went 1-0 up, but they missed another two or three sitters. So they could have been 3 or 4-0 up. But then a bit of quality from Isak. And then I sat in the room, didn't I? I said, I think we'll still win this 6-1. I know it was five in the
you
end.
You did? No, it was funny because at the end, I popped out one bit, and when I did, Sheffield United scored and they went 1-0 up. And I've gone, oh, Al. And he's gone, don't panic. This will finish 6-1. And then it got 5-1 with still like 15, 20 minutes to go. And I thought, God, this could be one of the great bits of punditry of our time. But as usual, he let us down.
Defensively have killed them. They've been hopeless.
How good's Isak, Al, in terms of comparisons with other strikers in the Premier League?
He's had a brilliant season. Very good player. He's a modern day forward in terms of like the trend we see now, rather than centre forward, he's a forward. He's a brilliant example of that. Had one or two injuries this season, but whilst he's been on the pitch, he's been absolutely magnificent. He's brilliant at running in behind because he's quick, and once he's away, you're not catching him. He's also very clever at coming short, you know, and dragging defenders in with him, therefore leaving space in behind. He's a very clever, intelligent player, and he's got great ability. They're sat on a great asset, and it would be absolutely bonkers of Newcastle if, for whatever reason, they sold him in the summer.
Well, he might want to go to a big club now, Alan.
Hey,
joking, Newcastle fans. Just kidding. They are an interesting situation because they're another of these teams, aren't they, struck by how much you can spend and you're allowed to do this and that. And there's been a lot of talk about them having to sell one of their big name players, and he was obviously mentioned. So, because obviously, under normal circumstances, you'd think that was complete madness.
Well, I still think it will be.
Yeah,
I still think it will be if they sell him. I know. I mean, I don't know what they can't remember what they bought for 60, 65 million, something like that. So he's worth an absolute fortune, and it would be bonkers if Newcastle sold him this summer, because you know what they're like. They're really, really difficult to get goal scorers, and he is one of the best. And they love him, and rightly so. You know what it's like up here in Newcastle, that you score goals, you're going to be adored, and the fans adore him, and it would be a right kick in the knackers if they sold him.
How good is Gordon, though, Alan? Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, brilliant.
You remember when he was linked to Chelsea before he went to Newcastle, and everyone was laughing at him? And now he's so consistent, it's ridiculous. Whether he's getting assists from crosses, whether he's taking on his man, whether he's defending for the team. And I know you put him in your England team moving forward for the Euros, but honestly, I wouldn't disagree with you now, because he can do absolutely everything. The improvement since the 21s, when they won it, was it last summer, has just been enormous. What a player he's turned out to be.
I wouldn't disagree with that. He's, for me, There's absolutely no doubt about it. He should be in the England squad. And as I said earlier, there's an argument for him to be starting because he's been that good.
Would you have him, considering the difficulties of this season, ahead of Rashford?
Definitely. 100%. I'm not even going to debate that.
You just did. 10 goals, 15 assists.
Yeah, he's definitely, he's going without a doubt. If Rashford can get anything in the last couple, I still think Rashford in the game could make a difference. He's not been great this season. Potentially take them both.
I've got a 26-man squad, so which I think we'll be relieved in one way, Gareth Southgate, because he'll be able to include two, three players that really, really good players that wouldn't have gone. But at the same time, it makes, I suppose, managing the squad more difficult because you've got more than half your players unhappy because they're not in the starting lineup and stuff. How do you deal with that?
I don't think that's the case this time. You know when you've been a Connie Cody, we've had him on the pod, great lad, yeah. And you basically go in there, you're experienced, great, in a really good player, but you know what your role is within the squad. Whereas you can leave three players out one time and then bring another three players in. And this time, they've got a genuine chance of winning the Euros. So the only thing, the hindrance I would say is in training sessions. You know, when you've got that big a squad, like who do you do set pieces with and, you know, doubling people up and leaving a few people out. I understand that part of it. But in terms of the tournament, being part of a squad that is probably favourites alongside with France to win the Euros, I really don't see it as a problem this time.
Absolutely agree on that. We've slipped away a little bit from the relegation zone. But yeah, Sheffield United are gone. They need to regroup and sort themselves out. Burnley are making a sneaky late run, ooh! Aren't they? Hey?
Hey? I told you. They're not done yet. I would love it. Alan, I said I would love it if Burnley managed to stay up. Oh, I would absolutely. I would play all your clips out. I've got them all ready. Honestly, John and Harry, the producers, they've already texted me already. We've got a little side deal going on. You know what I mean? They're already waiting for me. And what a turnaround it's been for Vincent Kompany's men. I told you. Don't doubt the captain.
You told us they were going to finish mid-table. That's what you told us.
Exactly.
Okay, maybe I over-egged it a little bit. I'm just gutted. It's took so long for them to get the rhythm in the play. And it's just that when you got a young team, it was always going to happen. Obviously, lost a lot of players. What about Matson? Matson, who they had on loan, he's going to be playing in the semi-final of the Champions League. They're losing that quality of player. I just think it might be too little, too late, unfortunately.
What about playing out from the back again? Oh, yeah. How many goals have they given
that's
away?
That's the way they
Burnley?
Play.
It's like, oh my God. I know it's the way they play, but surely, what did we say? What's the definition? The definition of insanity or madness or something like that is, oh, I mean, they actually played really well at Old Trafford, didn't they?
They did play really good football.
They sliced through Man United with ease at times. Now, I know that's not difficult because that's but I mean, if they had taken the chances, there'd have been 5 or 6 goals.
Well, according to Erik ten Hag, Manchester United are one of the most dynamic, entertaining teams in the country.
No, they're not.
Who said that?
Erik ten Hag after the game. He had a big thing about it, yeah.
I didn't hear him say that part. I listened to a couple of his quotes. I didn't hear them.
Yeah, they were there. Yeah, they were there, quite widely reported as well.
Say them quotes again, please.
That we have been and are one of the most entertaining and dynamic teams of the season.
Off the field, maybe, with all the... I don't think he's talking about on the field.
I know. Well, they are, you know, generally good to watch because they don't really bother with the midfield part defensively. So, you know, so you're always going to, you know, get kind of end-to-end football. Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, you just don't know, do you? I mean, one day they can get a brilliant result and you think, what on earth's happened? Or one other next, like they were at the weekend, they can be hopeless. But... yeah, you just don't know what you're going to get with them, but that's
can
not...
Burnley do it, Alan? I mean, obviously Sheffield United have gone, and then it's going to be 2 from 3, isn't it?
My guess is it'll be that Forest that stay up. I think they'll just have enough. It'll be tight, and Burnley have probably left it a little bit too late.
I would probably agree with that. I think we should definitely have a word on Everton. What a week or two they've had. Well, what an April they've had. Some terrific wins. They're definitely safe now, despite losing lots of points this season, and I think. Sean Dyche, you have to say, you know, whether you love his football or you don't love his football, he's done an amazing job.
We said it on Match of the Day at the weekend. He's managed that situation amazingly. You can imagine what it would have been like when they lost the points. You can imagine what the dressing room would have been like. The fans were angry and everything else, and they had that little bit of uplifting form, didn't they? Then they went back again. But I just think the job that he's done is remarkable. Remarkable job that he's done. He's handled it superbly well. He's always been balanced, whether they've won games or a lot of the time they've lost games. He's stayed very calm and everything else. He's never panicked. Under really, really difficult circumstances, he's done a magnificent job, Sean Dyche.
They've got a great song as well, Everton, haven't they? You, was you when you was there, guys?
Everton!
Never shine so brightly. It's when that starts going, it's goosebumps stuff. Brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely
great.
Brilliant. I'm great. Buzzing for him. Like Alan said, I just think he's been there before. We're a team that's, you know, has to deal with, you know, maybe the uncertainty, what's happening. Burnley didn't really have potentially the budget as other teams. He managed to keep them up. He's done that with Everton. And I think that's why we said at the start of the season they'd have enough.
Defensively, they've become very difficult to break down. And that's the reason, I think, overall, that they've stayed up. Because obviously, at the other end of the pitch, they've struggled.
I think it's only Arsenal, isn't it, that have kept more clean sheets than Everton. So that's been a huge strength of theirs, without doubt. I mean, they don't score many, but solid defensively.
I think only the top three have conceded fewer. Yeah. So, I mean, that speaks volumes for the organisational side of things. And I think particularly if you are struggling to score goals and have a striker banging them in regularly, then you've really got to make sure you are difficult to beat, haven't you? And he's done that. He really has.
I think he's just looked at his team and this is the way we have to play. We're not great in forward positions. So the way we get through games is be brilliant on set pieces, which is what they are. Be tight and compact, and that's the way. When I say he's managed the situation, he's managed his team, as you said earlier, in terms of the way they play, might not be pretty at times, but that's what he's got. That's what he's got available to him. The tools are there, and that's how he's set them up in the best way, and he's done a brilliant job in doing that.
You know, we talked about Branthwaite, and he's been outstanding this season, but we have to talk about his partner alongside him, Tarkowski. I mean, he's been so consistent. I think he's played pretty much all the minutes apart from one game when he come off with a head injury. And to have that and keep going and guiding Branthwaite through the game, he deserves a mention, because I remember one of his interviews when they got battered after one of the games, and he just said, yeah, we was poor today, but we'll get it right. We'll go again. And that's exactly what he does. So fair play to him.
Yeah, I think positionally he's really... I'm not comparing him, because John Terry is one of the greats, but you know, in that kind of position, he's one of those players that it's like a magnet to where the ball goes defensively, blocks and near post stuff and clearing it and getting headers in, a little bit in the way that John Terry did. I mean, obviously John Terry was an elite footballer, absolutely superb player and brilliant on the ball as well. And overall, obviously, a better central defender. But I think there is that terms of, you know, he's always in the right place at the right time and positionally really, really good, Tarkowski.
He's a 7 or 8 out of 10 every week, isn't he? In terms of reliability, getting him onto the pitch and the performance. It's vast majority of the time to 7 or 8. When you've got players like that, don't know if help.
It really does. So is it the three promoted clubs that are going down, or are you going to stick with, but you still think Burnley might sneak out, Micah?
No, it probably is the three promoted clubs. If we're being honest, I think it's hope for Burnley, my mate.
But it could come down to the last day of the season when Burnley play Forest.
It really could.
Yeah. I mean, there's every chance, I think, that possibly if Burnley might need to win. That'd be a hell of a last day. We had that at one end, and City and Arsenal.
Yeah, but then
going
what happens with the points thing? The points thing, the appeal and all that stuff. It's like,
I mean, they need. Surely they've got to resolve the appeal before the end of the season, because you can't imagine going to the end of the season.
I know.
And Forest are like relegated by a point.
Yeah.
And then the appeal system decides that we're going to give Forest 2 points back, and therefore say Burnley or Luton will get relegated because of that. I mean, Jesus,
it can't
you imagine?
Happen. That cannot be allowed to happen.
It's supposed to be some sort of, I don't know if it's a final decision, but there's supposed to be some news on Nottingham Forest this week, I think, is what I've been told.
Also, I think they play Sheffield United at the weekend. So, you know, if they got a couple of points back and won that one, all of a sudden we're going, well, that's it, it's done. But we don't know whether they'll get any points back. We've got no inside information on that. We can't do a regular slot on this this podcast now, don't we, on Bayer Leverkusen and their progress. Alan and myself, we're doing Match of the Day, obviously, on Saturday, and we were watching the other guy, I think it was taking place at the same time as Chelsea Villa. And we were watching. We thought, you know, as we've said many times, they've not lost a single game in any competition this season. And they were playing, it was Stuttgart at home, weren't they? And they went 2-0 down after about an hour. And you thought, oh, finally, they are actually going to lose a game. But not for the first time this season. They got one back. And then in the 97th minute, having had a goal disallowed as well, but in the 90th minute for offside, they did it again and they got a draw. And I've got actually a little list here. They've now scored 17 goals in the 89th minute or later in all competitions. And 12 of those goals have directly affected the result of them. They've managed to get out of the mire. So I've got a little list of them here. 90 plus 4 against Bayern to equalise. And then in the group stage, they had a lot of games against Karabakh. 90 plus 4 to win it. 90 plus 4 against Augsburg to win it. 90 plus 1 versus Leipzig to win. 90 plus 1 against Stuttgart to win. And here we go now in the knockout stages against Karabakh. 90 plus 2 to equalise in the first leg. 90 plus 3 to draw level against Karabakh in the second leg. And then 90 plus 8 against Karabakh to then win it. 90 plus 1 against Hoffenheim to win. 89, of course, you'll recall, against West Ham to equalise. 90 plus 7 versus Dortmund last week to equalise. And 90 plus 6 against Stuttgart to equalise.
Wow. They keep on going then.
Yeah, 3 games left in the league. 3 possible games in Europa League and the German Cup final to go for the most extraordinary achievement imaginable of going a single season without losing a game. Now, I know Arsenal did that, but that was just in the league. This is all competitions. That would be nuts, wouldn't it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Will this be the greatest ever?
Well, I don't see how you can... How it can not be to do it in all competitions. It should just be mad. But yeah, we thought it was gone, and then Alan, myself, we were cheering. I don't know why. Yeah. We got no skin in the game there. But it just seems like you want something like that to happen. Yeah, it was brilliant. But it wasn't quite moment of the week, was it?
Oh, here we go.
Leicester City. Leicester City are back
where
they belong.
I thought you were going to say Bournemouth beating Brighton 3-0 there, but no, I should have known better.
Well,
Gary,
the
carry
South
on.
Coast Derby, absolutely, and Bournemouth have had a brilliant season, and they'll be in the Premier League next season as well, as will Brighton. But that was kind of, well, I suppose it speaks volumes for Bournemouth that that's a mid-table game. I suppose that's really good. But back to the mighty Foxes, Leeds United. Mikey, it wasn't long ago you were going, Leeds, 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 and singing at me and giving me a load of grief because Leicester had a slight blip, a little bump on the road. I feel a bit for Leeds fans because I know what it's been like for Leicester because, you know, you have to get back in the Premier League. And Ipswich look, you know, Ipswich are now favourites to do that. Leeds look like they might drift into the playoffs as Micah's head slumps to the ground.
We don't want playoffs. We Leeds, we don't want... Oh, anything can happen in playoffs, can't it? I mean, it's devastating. They were so close, but yet so far.
Yeah, and a big thank you to QPR. Thank you from all us Leicester fans for it. A very enjoyable experience on Friday night with not too much stress. It wasn't quite the same as when Leicester won the league and I was sat down in the same place watching another team clinch it for us. But
hold on. You said you was going to do something with Leicester get promoted. What are you going to do?
No, I didn't.
You said you'll discuss it at the end of the season. You did.
Yeah, night out.
Micah, just we'll just bag all this enthusiasm and happiness and everything from Gaz, because next season when they get their arses spanked every week.
I mean, that's exactly misery. Right. Enjoying it now. Hopefully, we're doing this on Monday morning. Leicester play this evening, so 3 points would be nice, and then I think they'd only need a point to guarantee the title, and then we can have a big celebration and then look forward to 10 months of absolute misery. everyone desperately wants to get in the Premier League, and then you get there and it's like, oh, are we ever going to win a football match?
Could you dye your hair blue? Did you do that? Dye your hair? Or
fuck off. I'm already have a blue rinse. that's it then. I'm going to go off then and give my usual blue rinse and call it a day, you cheeky bastard. So that's it from me. Goodbye.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. Have a great week, everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.